Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. You know, we all want clean water and a clean environment, and we also enjoy the many wonderful products the dairy industry gives us. Quality meat, milk, and of course cheese. And on the show today, we'll learn more about the waste products produced by the dairy industry and how it impacts our environment, and talk also about how our guests are working to manage and create some innovative uses for some of those waste products as well. On the phone with us today, a returning guest, Rebecca Larson. She's an associate professor of biological systems engineering at UW-Madison. Some of her research interests include manure management, handling and treating agricultural and food processing waste. She looks at agricultural sustainability and waste-to-energy technologies. Rebecca, welcome back. Good to have you with us today.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having us on this morning.
Yeah. Also great to have first-time guest Victor Zavala. Victor is the an associate professor of chemical and biosystems engineering at UW-Madison, and his research interests are in computational optimization and statistics. He does high-performance computing and energy and agricultural systems, so he's working on a lot of things there. Victor, thank you for taking time to be with us as well.
Thank you for having me, Larry. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us. You can join in the call with your questions or comments about sustainability, computer modeling. We'll be talking about a little bit with them. Give a call, 800-642-1234. And you can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Why don't we start with having you both talk a little bit about your work and what excites you about your research. And Rebecca, why don't you start?
Sure, great. I think everybody's excited about manure. So I've always gotten into working with manure because it's the opportunity to turn something that people think is very negative, or it has some negative connotations. It can have some negative environmental impacts if not handled properly. And so I like to use that opportunity to try to come up with new ways that we can process things and use things to our advantage and reduce the environmental impacts and hopefully, improve some economic outlooks for the producers and others who are doing livestock farming.
Yeah, sure thing. Victor Zavala, what about you? What excites you about your research and what are you involved with?
Well, so I guess Becky got me excited about manure when I started working with her. So I find the dairy industry a very fascinating industry with creates a lot of social value, very important for the state and the economics of the state. But it also brings out some very interesting, complex logistical problems in how do we deal with dairy products, with the waste. And those types of problems are the types of problems we always find exciting with systems engineering techniques, optimization, and modeling, which are the things that I work on. So yeah, it's a very exciting problem.
Yeah. So what are the biggest challenges the dairy industry is facing? Is it waste?
So, I mean, right now, obviously, they're facing even more challenges with trying to handle their milk and finding some outlets. And the price of milk is very low at the moment. So they have a lot of challenges. And even some when milk is becoming a product that they have to handle as a waste in some circumstances. So they are obviously facing a ton of other challenges with the issues we've been facing recently. But before we got into some issues with coronavirus, I think, waste was one of the big things that was kind of limiting expansion, possibly, limiting some of the ways that they might adapt and move in the situation. So there were a lot of lawsuits around the country, lots of other things that kind of showed this kind of intersect with environment and the dairy industry and other livestock industries. That's a challenge for many of them to operate under.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I know the both of you are part of a team working on a study that's focusing on dairy farm operations and I think water as well, water and energy use. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So there's lots of, you know, the farms, we want to look at different ways that, so if you can imagine a dairy farm, right, there's a lot of things they have to think about. When I talk to dairy farmers, the primary thing they're thinking about is producing milk, right, and taking care of their herd. And so there's a lot of other things that go into that, like how much energy they use, what the how they're going to manage their manure, what the environmental impact of that manure is, how much energy they're using, where their water's coming from, where it's going. So there's a many, many things to think about. And even as a researcher, that becomes pretty complicated. So even as you start to look at things, you even start to realize if I just focus on one thing, like say I want to reduce my greenhouse gas emissions, the recommendations for doing that might be opposite of what we might want to do to improve water quality. So there's a lot of challenges in how we sort through those. And even myself kind of putting all those together was very complicated. So I think Victor and I, as we kind of explored this project, he had some opportunities and ways that we could look at the choices we make using some more sophisticated technology. So I don't know if, Victor, you want to explain a little bit about how
jump
works.
In there, Victor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I guess the idea is to try to identify what technologies are available for processing waste. What are the economic incentives or obstacles that those technologies are facing? So with Becky, we've been exploring, for example, trying to recover natural gas, biogas from waste. Also recovering liquefied methane, which is just a compressed version of biogas. And also try to recover fertilizers that can potentially be used in different types of applications. So some of those technologies for recovering those products are expensive. Not all farmers can afford them. It's certain size of farms may be able to do it. So therefore, it becomes a complex problem with a lot of logistical questions. The other aspect is also transportation. So manure is a liquid. It's mostly water, 93% water. So when you're thinking about moving vast amounts of manure from all the cows we have in the state, over 1 million cows, so that becomes a very challenging problem. So we're trying to develop models that help us analyze all those trade-offs, help us just put all the pieces together, and ultimately provide recommendations for policy. So how are we going to create incentives for farmers to try to fix the problem?
Boy, I am not a stat. I had a lot of statistics classes and so forth, but I'm not really as good with numbers for sure as you are, and probably for better than anybody else for sure. Probably a whole lot worse. So can you talk about how you kind of put these together?
Yeah. So basically, the idea is that we build models that we call them technically supply chain models. So these models are no different to the type of model that Amazon will solve when they're trying to distribute products, right, to different customers that are dispersed over a given region. So you can imagine in this case it's a similar type of problem where you have a large amounts of waste in different farms that are dispersed across the state. And you want to understand, like, how do you distribute the manure, how far it can go before it becomes very expensive to transport. And if you cannot move it too far, then that means that you will need to process it on site to try to make it more transportable. So, for example, one thing you can do is just remove the water. That's a simple step, relatively simple step. But sometimes you need to go a little bit farther than that. So there are technologies also, for example, to try to recover some of the organics from the manure to create these pellets that, for example, you could use as fertilizer and trying to move the manure far away. So all boils down to try to model all those interconnections. These are mathematical models that will give you answers to all these type of logistical questions.
Wow. Talking today with Rebecca Larson, Associate Professor of Biosystems Engineering at UW-Madison, and Victor Zavala, Associate Professor of Chemical and Biological Engineering at UW-Madison. Great as we talk with them about dairy farms and resource use. They're part of the Wisconsin Energy Institute as well. So again, Wonderful having them with us. You can join in with your own questions or comments, and I hope you will. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. The dairy industry is pretty huge, lots of different groups and people involved. How do you even begin to put it all together, Rebecca?
Well, I think there's a lot of different ways we have to look at it. So that's one of the things that we've been trying to model and use some information. So if you can imagine, one dairy farm looks at their situation differently, right? So they have to choose how they're going to invest their money and what kind of strategies they want to take. So what are their particular concerns? So do I have concerns for pathogens in my manure and reaching groundwater? Or are my concerns more about ammonia losses? Or am I phosphorus bound in my field? So then they have to look at their particular situation and decide which type of technology are they going to implement to try to achieve those goals. Now, then we look at larger areas like a watershed or a county or even the state, and the goals might be different for, you know, different areas. So what we're trying to show with some of the work is that putting the pieces together for different people might look a little bit different, and there might be different strategies we need to take when we're kind of examining those different levels. So like at a dairy farm, they might need one particular type of processing system to help them achieve better distribution of their phosphorus. Whereas at a watershed level, they might need to start looking at how they would implement a system across a number of farms to tackle a specific issue. And so it's really important for us to try to attach some economic information as well as environmental information to each kind of processing and how each of those different groups might move forward in advancing their particular goals so that we can help guide them to technologies that will do that for them. Because you can imagine probably the difficulties of making those decisions without any information.
Yeah, without any information. And Victor, putting that information together has got to be pretty challenging.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so as in any of these problems that are systems level types of problems, infrastructure level types of problems, so as you might expect, there's a lot of missing pieces of data. So in some cases, we have to rely on government agencies providing the data. Sometimes we need to figure out the smart ways to come up with estimates. But yeah, it is complicated. And as you mentioned, the big issue is that there are many different stakeholders in the problem. So we need to figure out how to reconcile all their different expectations, all the different goals that they have. So yeah, and that's precisely challenging because every different stakeholder thinks differently. Everyone has a different objective, a different goal, different perceptions of risk. And collecting that type of information is precisely what, also what makes it challenging to solve the problem.
Boy, have you had any successes so far with this in working with farmers? I'm trying to imagine you've got the individual farmers who have their own interests, but then you have to look also at the region or the area surrounding with all the farmers and non-farmers and everything else that's in that sort of larger area. So how do you take something that's, for an individual farmer that's also going to work to the benefit of the region as a whole, Rebecca?
So that is a difficult challenge, and that's some of the things that we're modeling that we're trying to look at. So, for example, we might take a particular separation technology, right? So we might want to say, okay, let's see if we can pyrolyze manure where we turn the manure solids into biochar, right? So we've really densified the nutrients, and then we can try to see if we can move those farther away. Now, should I invest in that? Or should I invest in a simple solid liquid separator? Or should I invest in a treatment system that uses forward and reverse osmosis and produces lots of different products? So what Victor has been trying to do is to look at putting all of those individual technologies into a system, which he can talk about more. But there's been some interesting things that he's found already that in sharing our data together, you know, information like the transport costs are so significant in many of the systems that the reality is implementing specific ones on farm, we found has been as coming out as being the most economically advantageous situation when we can densify manure nutrients to a certain point. So we're trying to take some of those lessons and expand them to make recommendations for producers and counties or watersheds on how they might want to invest their funds.
Lots there. And we have Georgia from Madison online with a question. But before we go to Georgia, I want to let you know you can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Rebecca Larson, Victor Zavala, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Natalie Guyette, our producer today. And Tyler Ditter, our engineer. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Rebecca Larson and Victor Zavala. Rebecca is an associate professor in biosystems engineering at UW-Madison, and Victor, an associate professor of chemical and biological engineering at UW-Madison. It's great to have them with us. They're part of a team that's working on a study focusing on dairy farm operations and their water and energy use. Join in with your own questions, 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Now let's go to Georgia in Madison. Georgia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello? Yes, we can.
What's on my mind? I'm wondering if the kind of societal cost of greenhouse gases and global warming are somehow factored into the things that are considering.
Good question. Thank you very much for calling. Rebecca, or do you want to start?
Sure. I'll start out with how we're implementing those, and maybe Victor can talk a little bit about how they're modeling them. Of the environmental impacts, one of the tools we're using is something called life cycle assessment. So in the life cycle assessments, we look at a dairy facility and we look at when we implement each technology, how that affects the environmental impacts. And one of those indicators is greenhouse gas emissions. So we've been actually integrating that for various indicator impact areas like greenhouse gas emissions, energy use, water use, nitrogen and phosphorus losses. So we've been taking that information and modeling that for the changes and then using that with economic data. Victor can then model some of that. And he can talk a little bit about how they frame the modeling to kind of place maybe some of that on taxpayers or if we wanted to do that, you know, the producers pay for it. So I'll let him talk a little bit about how that works.
Yeah, Victor, go ahead.
Yeah, so exactly. So as part of the project, we're also collaborating with the Environmental Protection Agency, and one of the things we're looking at is what are the right avenues to incentivize ultimately the installation of these technologies. So as I mentioned, some of these technologies are expensive, so you need to create incentives for them to exist, and one of them is precisely trying to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions. So the idea is we incorporate that information into the model. The model will tell us what are appropriate, you could think about tax rates for those emissions that will incentivize some of the transactions of waste or installation of the technologies. We're also capturing impact of phosphorus. So what is the, when the phosphorus, there's runoff into the lakes, how much economic impact that is going to create, and that is going to give us some indication of how are we going to penalize for that impact. So all those factors are incorporated in the model, And the government agencies are very interested in that. Precisely, they're trying to investigate what is the right way to incorporate them in policy.
Yeah, Georgia, thanks again for that question. Ron in Madison, your turn now. Ron, hello.
Thanks. The Madison Metropolitan Sewer District uses a small fleet of trucks, which inject the sewage sludge into the farmers' soils. They don't spread it on the surface. It's at least several inches down. I'm trying to find out whether any of that technology could inject dairy cattle manure slurry 24 inches deep into soils, or if we would have to invent something like a subsoiler with a steel injection tube mounted right behind the shank. My idea is to try to get it down in the 12 to 24 inch zone, but also to mix the manure with crushed ground agricultural lime, either calcitic or dolomitic, which also adds magnesium. The idea is that on our upland soils, especially the lust-derived soils, perhaps 80% of the land in Wisconsin has a developed subsoil called an argillic horizon. They are generally acidic. So if we can put the nutrients from the cow's manure plus the limestone down into the acid zone that may be pH 5 plus or minus one unit, well, more likely from 4.5 up to 6.5, but put it into the acidic soil zone, it will make that part of the soil even better for plant roots to grow. And it would greatly reduce the chances of it washing down into streams. If the soil slope is more than 5%, then it should be injected on the contour, just like the old level terraces were designed. That may be details, but how deep can those trucks inject the manure, and how much more expensive would it be than just spreading it on top?
Oh, well, Rebecca, I'm going to turn to you for that one.
Certainly.
Go ahead.
So they already use injection equipment, and there's lots of different toolbars that you can connect to different various types of manure spreaders to inject manure into the soil. The nice thing about that is when you inject it, obviously you reduce runoff from a precipitation event afterwards, and as well as you can reduce the ammonia emissions. So if you can incorporate or inject the manure into the soil, you reduce some of the ammonia emissions. We're actually including some of that in the modeling, but there are things you have to be aware of. So sometimes it can be a little more costly to do that. The bigger challenge is that sometimes when you have like a wet field, it's harder to get the equipment into the field. I would also say there's some other challenges that you have to be aware of. So if you have a high groundwater table, injecting the manure may have more negative consequences if it gets you closer to where that groundwater table comes, if you have issues with pathogens. So you can see there's a lot of different concerns depending upon where you are at. So you have to know what are the potential issues you have, and then be able to select the technologies that then give you the benefit for the circumstances where you're at.
No, interesting. I was thinking about the groundwater level issues with injection as well, and I guess that you're right. It would depend a lot on the location, the kind of soil that we have, and the geology of a particular location. Ron, thanks very much. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's turn to Jeff in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Jeff, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a couple things for your guest there to consider. I'm a country boy. I grew up in the country, grew up on a farm, actually, and am quite disgusted with how farming has changed. We used to say fresh country air. Well, country air no longer is fresh. It used to be able to hang clothes out on the clothesline and not have them smell like manure. My concerns are what we're doing to the water table, to our drinking water, and also if you look at this corona thing here, how bio is spread, what are the possibilities of spreading disease through the way they're doing this? In this day and age, we got to come up with a better way. Eliminate the odor, eliminate the problem with contaminating the wells. And I'll listen to see what they have to say.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Maybe start again with Rebecca, and then Victor can maybe chime in too with the modeling that he does in relation to some of this. Rebecca?
Yeah, so there are many challenges with manure, and I know that we've seen some issues with groundwater contamination, particularly up in where the cholera is coming from, which is very concerning. So I would say some of the things we're trying to do, which is treat the manure in a way where you hit high temperatures, where you can destroy some of those concerns, like maybe I inactivate the pathogens before it goes out to the field. Or maybe in some of our recovery scenarios, we use processing that densifies the manure, and then we can send it to alternative areas that are nutrient deficient. I would say there's other technologies that we're exploring that treat the manure to clean water. So you would be able to discharge clean water, and you'd have much less of the streams remaining. There would be much lower amounts of those, so you could use more precise applications or treat them to reduce some of the biological concerns with pathogens and other issues there, and so that you can better manage some of the streams that you get to reduce some of those concerns that the caller is mentioning.
Yeah. Victor, does that certainly that has to play a role in the work that you're doing in modeling?
Yeah, absolutely. So, so I think going back a little bit to the caller's question, I think that one of the challenges is how the industry has evolved over time. We're seeing the consequences of an evolution over certain amount of time, a significant amount of time. So just to give you an idea, back in 1960, we had around 100,000 dairy farms in the state. There were smaller farms. So now we have centralized a lot of those operations. So right now we have around 9,000 dairy farms. But the number of cows hasn't really changed that much. So that means that we're putting more animals together in the same region. And I think that we're starting to see precisely some of those effects by centralizing some of those that waste. So definitely, I think one of the things that we're looking into as part of the model is trying to precisely also understand how industry can potentially change to potentially just spread some of those farms geographically a little bit better so that some of these effects are having less impact. And also how that might have consequences on health and spreading of diseases and things like that. So yeah, those are different aspects that we consider in the models as well.
Jeff, thanks again for calling. We'll take another call. Again, you can join us 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. But Matthew in Warren, Illinois, it's your turn now. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, thank you for taking me. I'm the president of a nonprofit that works with educating the public on the dangers of industrial agriculture. And as Victor just said, one of the biggest problems we have is we took farms that used to be spread all over the area, each making smaller amounts of manure that were spread over more fields, and we're concentrating them in small areas that generate a tremendous amount of manure, which, as he also said, is very heavy and very expensive to transport. So you're trying to spread it over very small areas. The problem is that farmers are not paid enough money to properly handle the manure. And as long as you keep paying farmers subsistent, sustainable amounts of money for their milk, they cannot use the technologies that your guests are talking about coming up with. It's too expensive for them to treat the manure that way or to put in processing plants. And that's why you have part of the problems you have is that the manure has become something that they have to get rid of as cheaply and as quickly as possible, often during the spring and fall when there aren't crops in the field. And we often, as you know, have very wet springs and falls, which makes it very difficult to get rid of large amounts of manure quickly and cheaply during those times without causing the contamination that has, to be honest, caused in many areas of Wisconsin up to one-third of all wells are polluted to the point that people can't drink the water anymore. So until we change the financial concerns were not going to change this problem. And this is what has destroyed our small family farmers. We need to get back to smaller farms spread out more evenly. Helps the small family farmers. It helps rural communities by keeping their residents employed at viable jobs, and it stops the concentration of manure in certain areas that then overload the resources available.
Yeah. Well, Matthew, thank you for calling. Let's get some comments from both of our guests. Rebecca, start with you.
Sure. So I agree that there's a lot of challenges, but there's also reasons that the industry developed in this way, and mostly due to economics. So, you know, I kind of think of this in two ways. Number one, the efficiencies you gain with farms getting larger are important. So when we look at things like greenhouse gases, larger farms are able to produce a certain amount of milk with a lower greenhouse gas emissions content per unit milk produced because of their ability to gain these efficiencies. Now, on the other side, they are concentrating animals in an area, so we have some difficulties there to face. And the largest farms are the only ones who can and are implementing these technologies. Now, I don't find it necessary, in my opinion, to weigh on whether a farm needs to be small or large. They need to determine for their own land base and their own operating conditions whether or not they can meet the conditions we set up that they for regulations and trying to be sustainable. So I think all sizes of farms can be sustainable. There's just different challenges we have to face at those sizes. So maybe at a smaller size farm, based on your land base, you can haul to the nearby area. And larger farms are going to have to invest in technologies to disperse if they don't have the land base to do so.
Yeah. Victor, a comment?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I agree. There's no easy answer. There's no extreme one side or the other. This is precisely the complex, the complexity of the problem, that the trade-offs are very difficult. So at the same time, we're trying to feed a growing population. So we need efficiency, economies of scale. And that's why we, as Becky is saying, we need to make these farms more efficient. But also at the same time, we need to start opening up the eyes of the consumer to understand that the products that come out of any industry also have environmental impacts. And we need to figure out a way to connect the consumer to the farmers in a way that they can also take into consideration some of those waste streams and some of those impacts. So, for example, I will always encourage like consumers to go and talk to the farmers, to talk about some of the challenges they're facing with waste and all these things, so that potentially there could be some interesting markets that could be created out of this. So, for example, maybe some of the manure that is created there could be used for some composting or some other type of product that could be used in urban areas. So so I think we need to get creative into integrating the communities and creating markets, and those markets are going to create the financial incentives that we need.
Now, Matthew, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. Gene in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Gene.
Hi. Yes, I'd like to see more of the farmers embrace rotational grazing. It spreads the manure so that there's not the intensive amount of energy required to distribute it onto the croplands. It reduces and it typically provides an actual capture of carbon dioxide. So, you know, I think we need to re-examine our method of farming and get back to using the cows the way they are supposed to in terms of converting grasses and such into milk and meat.
So, Rebecca, comment on that.
So, you know, we model a lot of different things, and I'll say I'm going to generalize here because that's what sometimes we have to do because all farms are very different. But I would say grazing, while it can have its benefits, also has its drawbacks, right? So what I would encourage people to understand is there isn't one perfect system, right? So whereas grazing, they do have lower efficiency in milk production. So per unit milk produced, we generally have more greenhouse gas emissions, for example, per that unit milk produced for grazing animals. But then again, they may reduce water quality concerns depending upon your circumstances. Now, you have to very much look at the individual practice. So I don't think that it's that we need to shift to one type of farming. What we need to do is provide the solutions so that each of the individual types of farms can find ways to be profitable while also integrating the environmental the practices that may improve their sustainability. And I think one of the things Victor kind of mentioned there was talking about developing markets for some of the products. So if we can recover some of the products and sell them and create a revenue stream that also encourages, you know, proper distribution, then we can achieve some economic incentives as well as achieving some environmental ones. And I think those kinds of solutions are the ones that are going to move us in a direction that can be sustainable, not only environmentally, but economically.
Yeah. And Victor, in terms of your modeling, how far along are you with the modeling?
Yeah, so we've been making quite a good amount of progress thanks to his collaboration with Becky. And so we have models now that operate at different levels of resolution. So we have models that look at a county level for the entire state. So we aggregate the different regions in the state in that way. And we use those models to, for example, give us some indication of how could we balance phosphorus in the region. For example, how do we become phosphorus neutral in the state? Right now, what we're having is a lot of accumulation of phosphorus in the state. So we use those types of models for that. And we also have some models that look at very high resolution inside the Upper Yajara watershed region, that try to look into more specifics into what are the impacts of those phosphorus, for example, impacts in the lakes and eutrophication algae blooms. So we have quite a good number of models nowadays that help us answer different types of questions that the public might be interested in answering. We also have models. These models, we're actually also making them available to a website that allows people just to play around with their own models and build their own case studies, and hopefully this will be very easy to use for multiple people so that they can come up with their own solutions.
Mm-hmm. And do you have that website up and running yet, or?
Yeah, we're in the process of about to release probably in the next month, so we're very close.
Very close. Well, you're going to have to let us know when that comes out so that we can post that information up on our website. And maybe have you back again at some point to talk about this some more. Rebecca and Victor, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks to all the callers.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, lots of callers. And still callers on, many callers online. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's kind of the way it goes here on the Ideas Network. We run out of time a little bit and move on to our next topic. And speaking of topics, Mike Crane is coming up next, director of Wisconsin Public Radio, for another Mondays with Mike. So stay with us.